All right, we'll go back, almost done with religious hermeneutics, page 52. I'll read you a couple of sentences. So we're going now, all this talk was so that we make the shift from writing it off as an illusion to recognizing the psychic existence of what we have just dismissed as false.
Going from which stage to which?
Fourth stage to the fifth stage. That really is what the book is dealing with. In the face of these tendencies, those tendencies being, you know, cutting up the Bible and tossing out anything that's unreasonable, almost all of which belong to the fourth stage of projection withdrawal, well, that would be the positive meaning of this rationalizing Bultmann guy. He's trying to get rid of the dogmatism that comes along with thinking something is literally true. But he you know, as it jumps out of the frying pan into the fire. Jung can be understood as the initiator and advocate of the fifth stage. Going ahead consistently from the fourth stage, he put the question, if all these assertions concerning the faith are, taken concretely, no longer credible, then where did the projection come from? Well, we would say it comes from ourselves. But now she makes the argument a little more complicated. Go down a couple of sentences. But according to Jung, these symbolic religious experiences do not spring from personally acquired complexes, but rather from a much deeper, generally human unconscious psychic matrix that, as is well known, he called the collective unconscious and also the objective psyche. This discovery, however, raises once again the problem of the extent to which the contents of the collective unconscious may be described as subjective, as belonging to the subject. In Jung's view, many elements of faith, to be sure, can no longer be regarded as metaphysical realities, but on the other hand, they are not simply subjective content either. Big sentence. Not simply subjective contents either. Remember, on page 34, I said we got the first big point that wasn't 34, where was it? Page 13. That these projections come from autonomous powers. Make a note here real quick for myself. This is the question we'll be circling around for a while. Well, for the rest of the book. If they are not merely, this is me now saying, if they are not simply subjective contents, then what are they? Moreover, Jung stressed that he definitely believed in the possibility of the metaphysical reality of religious contents, although there is no possibility of investigating such contents psychologically. We've said that a million times. That's that chapter. If you're uncomfortable. Now, next chapter. The first paragraph is a stretch. What we'll be doing in the next chapter is doing the same thing to science we just did to religion. We thought once causality ran the universe. We now know it doesn't. Apropos quantum physics, that causality at the subatomic level doesn't exist. So, that means causality was a projection. What does it mean to integrate the projections in science just as much as the projections in religion. That will be the subject of this next chapter. And really, I think it's kind of a bit of genius that she raises that question. We don't really think of science as projecting, mm-hmm. but it's as much a projection as religion.
We think of it as completely objective.
As objective, right. Now, this next paragraph will cause us some distress. Maybe it would help if I just go back and look at where she has dropped hints of this paragraph up to now. The first hint was what I mentioned on page 13. These contents are autonomous powers. The next hint, I just realized, was on page 34. What are the nature of these split off parts of our personality? It's at the bottom of 34. And then we just had her saying they are not simply subjective contents. Now we get to a fuller description of the question. It is perhaps clear from the preceding chapter that projection plays an important role in the field of higher religious ideas. That should be okay by now. Two questions, nevertheless, remain unanswered. Where can the line be drawn between what is transsubjective and what is not?
Would you define those?
Yes.
Terms.
But let me make you more confused before before we try to define them. What is psychic and what is metapsychic? In other words, transsubjective and transpsychic are not interchangeable. So what we need to do now is define what is transsubjective and what is transpsychic. That's hopefully is addressing your question, Carol. Transsubjective means, this is according to my understanding, it's not something that only belongs to my psychology. If I may refer to a painting of yours, Carol, which has never ceased to amaze me. You all know that snake in snake in the mosque picture?
Mm-hmm,
yeah, I'll show a picture of it. Some of you know it, maybe. Have you seen that? Pass it around. When did you paint that? Do you remember the date?
I think it was 2006.
2006. Now, when she showed me the picture, I had absolutely no idea what it was about.
Well, it arrived like a foreign body.
Thank you. Well, my point exactly. Then, when Arab Spring began, I thought, well, that has anticipated Arab Spring. That is the rage in the Arab psyche that is attacking the traditional the image of traditional authoritative Arabic religion, Muslim religion. Now, that was something she experienced and painted, but that is a painting of processes way beyond her. It's trans-subjective. If that were merely about her whatever complex, it would be subjective. But it is about processes, and it's a knowledge of processes outside of herself. And you even used the phrase, how did you say it?
It arrived like a foreign body.
It arrived like a foreign body, so that we can have experience, which is not only our experience. And what I think is so remarkable about that is it occurred before the historical event, before we even had a hint that this would be happening. I don't think anybody expected this eruption in the Near East. So, projections are very often from a trans-subjective condition.
When we say trans-subjective, can it also belong to our psychology?
It could.
Okay.
It could.
Your own personal psychology. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, if it could belong to one's own personal psychology and others, or if it only belongs to others.
I think it could only belong to others, but I'm not sure about that.
Either or.
Or it, maybe it belongs to both. I don't know. But I think this is a question, it's very important, and it's a question Jung came to at the end of his life and didn't answer because he didn't know how to answer it.
Well, the way that came to me, it makes me think about that blind sight and the actual eye having other ways of perceiving, and making me wonder if even that stretches into the future, because it was a spontaneous visualization when I was looking at a photograph of that mosque with water below it, and the serpent spontaneously visualized. So it just makes me think about that more archaic part of the brain, and can it be affected by the future? And it's especially affected by emotional images.
Yeah.
So I have to wonder.
So it wasn't just the future. It was all the rage was there. Mm-hmm. What you saw
the attack is the future, and that's what that serpent is coming up. That's the whole significance of the image in my mind, is the act, not the fact that there is rage there. Because I think consciously one would know there has to be.
You could argue that, but I bet it wasn't in your mind.
No, it certainly wasn't
about it, yeah.
Yeah.
No.
No, I think you were picking up their experience. I don't know where to go with this, just to say, I want to acknowledge how important I think it is, that you probably heard me say this, but I'll say it again, that Jung felt that he only worked on the inner aspect of the individuation process. And he told von Franz, which is in that interview of her down in Balingen, that he realized that, but he also realized the individuation process was an external process as well as an internal process, and that he only had one lifetime. He worked on the internal, but he hoped successive generations would work on the external aspect of the individuation process. And so I'm just acknowledging, I think it is a huge area for our increasing inquiry into the nature of life. And I would say he got it right, but by necessity limiting it to the internal process, that there really isn't internal and external anymore. There is there is trans-subjective experience, which is both internal and external at the same time. And the guy who understood that, which maybe if you're game sometime we could attack his work, a guy who understood that is Arnold Toynbee. He picks up where Jung left off. That's another whole thing. I bought his 12 volumes this summer, and I'm about halfway through them. Okay, so that's trans-subjective. You're more comfortable with that. This is not normal thinking, you know. If you're thinking, did I miss this along the way? No. Nobody's thought this stuff before.
So if you get an insight in a dream about, just as an example, another person's illness,
yeah,
that's transubjective.
Transubjective.
But you can work with that symbolically for yourself.
Yeah.
As well. Okay.
Yes. I've had dreams of people's problems before they called me to do analysis, and I didn't know them.
Well, it seems to me like there isn't necessarily anything of you in that perception, or about you, necessarily.
I think there is, but it's a larger question that you sort of raised, that, at least in my work, you know, that we attract people who are working on the same things we are.
But would you agree that sometimes we get perceptions and they're totally nothing to do with us?
I think we have to acknowledge that's a possibility, sure. Yeah. And I think what might for somebody else be a huge problem for me is a quirk. And I got other things on my agenda. So I could be distracted by, you know, focusing on absolutely everything that bug the people around me, where I got bigger issues that I should be focusing on. So even though it may be theoretically true, practically it's important to stay with your own garbage and help other people work with their garbage.
But if you're looking at the macrocosm, microcosm argument, everything that would be in the macrocosm would be in the microcosm.
Yes. I think so.
Oh. I don't know.
How about much of?
You know, every neurosis of every person in the whole world is in me? I don't think so.
I think it is in me, but that's another story. That's not right. That's why I've chosen this profession. How about, say, much of?
I could go with that.
Yeah.
I can't see everything. But that's not on the personal level, I mean.
During this past year, I had a dream about the husband of a girl that I went to high school with. I mean, and she and I only, if I go to Michigan, I usually get together with her, but usually we only communicate at Christmas, with a Christmas card. And I dreamed that he had been hurt. Not too long afterwards, she mailed me a note and had a picture of her and another woman and I, when we taught in Sunday school, it was a picture of us with the little kids in the Sunday school. And she mentioned that her husband had been in the hospital for heart surgery. That seems mm-hmm. like the same kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It just is weird.
Transubjective.
Yeah.
That's transubjective, yeah. So, that's what she called autonomous in that earlier quote. Autonomous powers or transubjective powers. What's that mean practically? Well, that when those projections are integrated, they become elements in ourselves that put the conditions to us. We don't control them. They tell us what to do. We have to ask, what do they need? What must I do to serve them? Not, how can I control them to fit into my agenda, but how must I adapt to their agenda? Might be another way to put it. And you can see, this is decentralizing the ego. Okay. Trans-psychic means metaphysical. So if I dream of God, that God image may not be in me, but it doesn't mean there is a metaphysical God of a different character than my humanness. There may be, but it doesn't necessarily mean there is. In other words, Jung says, I don't know. So for me, the discussion stops there.
So what's metapsychic? Is that metaphysical?
Metapsychic would be metaphysical.
And what she kind of glosses over is they're not interchangeable, although many authors carelessly use the two words as
right.
if they have the same meaning. So where you get into trouble with that is then you believe that whatever your God image is saying to you is equally important for each person in the world.
Absolutely. That's the big point. Yeah, thank you. That's the big point.
So if you're not clear on these things.
Yeah. If it's metapsychic, then if Allah says kill, then I kill. Or if Yahweh says kill, then I kill. If it's transubjective, I can say, but Yahweh, you also said in the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not kill. You got a little problem there, Yahweh. But if you say that about Allah, and the wrong Muslim hears you, you're a dead duck. Literally. This was brought home to me when my mom reminded me I went to kindergarten with Salman Rushdie's first wife.
Go figure.
Or Dave Letterman got a death threat because he made a joke about, I forget exactly what it was, Allah or... I don't remember what. But you see, that when you think God is trans-psychic, that is what Jung is driving at. It puts a conviction that is beyond human discourse. Does that make sense?
Well, I'm thinking about the evangelical pastor who was going to burn the Quran.
Yeah. Same.
And regardless of how affected
it is, that's for him, God is trans-psychic. What God says is beyond all human considerations.
What his God image
What his God image says is taken as fact and is not open to discussion. These sound like we're nitpicking, but the practical implications are crucial here. The wars of religion are based on people who think what their God said is the final story.
And she brings that up at the beginning of chapter 2. Following this thread, on page 35, following this thread, one sees that the many great historical conflicts have originated because men whose religious ideas express different stages of development fail to communicate with one another.
If your God is trans-psychic, then you cannot communicate with somebody else whose God is trans-psychic. Because you don't say, I feel it's wrong, you say, God says it's wrong, and if you correct me, then I'll kill you. Very important. Well, even though we're talking about science, she kind of throws this in there as an introduction. But just so we get clear on these two terms. And I've said this now several times today, but what we'll be examining then, what is the nature of reality such that part of us is trans-subjective but not trans-psychic?
I'm kind of having a problem with them, and what I'm wondering is, it's not so much maybe the content of them, but just your relationship to them. Is that the difference?
Well, with trans-psychic, there is only one relationship possible, mm-hmm. and that is parent to child, authority to believer.
You mean just because of the history of what?
Well, just because the nature of a trans-psychic content. Allows no room for other.
Because of how we've defined it. You
mean. Well, I think how it presents itself.
Really?
Can you name one religion whose conservative elements tolerate other religious views?
Well, I can have ideas of there being something metaphysical, but that doesn't mean I define it.
No, you see, you don't define it. It defines its characteristics.
Yes.
That's the problem.
But who's to know what those are?
Well, the perceiver thinks they know what they
are. That's what I mean by it's the history of how we define it.
That's what I was trying to get at. It seems like it's more like the relationship of the perceiver to the content in a way.
So what you would be saying is that in a world that's trans-subjective, somebody whose beliefs are opposite of mine but have brought them into relationship to the self, I could have a relationship with. We could agree to disagree. But somebody who's trans-psychic, we cannot. Because they would be selling me.
If we rely on a certain definition
right.
of the metaphysical.
Right.
My point is the metaphysical defines itself and leaves no room for discussion. That's the nature of this metaphysical reality. Now, I could agree to say, well, I don't agree with you. But then it's not. Then I'm not in relationship with the metaphysical reality anymore.
So you think the metaphysical reality defines itself in the history of our understanding of what metaphysical?
Well, in history of religion, yeah. Thou shalt have no other god.
Okay, there we go. That's
thou shalt have no other god before me.
That's what. That's the phrase we needed to connect to it. Mm-hmm. Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Okay.
With one exception, Buddhism. Have you ever heard of a Buddhist missionary?
Right.
See what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because they don't have a trans-psychic reality.
Mm, right. How does this relate to the self, though? Because the self definitely decentralizes the ego and is something that we serve, but if I understand what Jung has been saying is that we come into relationship with the self. Is the self trans-psychic?
Mm-hmm.
No?
Well, not as far as we know. No, that's
well,
not right. Not as far as our knowledge can ascertain.
Okay.
It might be. But for him, that question's irrelevant.
Because what's important is what it is asking of each individual
person.
Yeah.
What is relevant is my relationship with it, which means I have as much voice as it does.
Okay. So it would be neither trans-subjective nor trans-subjective.
No, the self is trans-subjective.
It is. Okay.
I feel like one of those big machines where you drop the marble in and things bounce here and here. It's like what we're talking about.
Well, let's get this straight because it's really important.
Yeah, I keep having to look at at which word is which in my notes to keep the string in my head.
Okay, trans-psychic, think of toilet paper. Can't have it. TP. Bad word. This is how I remember things, sorry. Giving you a glimpse into my inner world. but trans-psychic... Trans-subjective simply means it's not part of your subjective psyche only. It makes no statement about the presence of another world.
But then if you were, if you believed, that, but your understanding of God, brokers no discussion or disagreement, and you're with other people who believe that same thing, then...
It's very cozy.
I mean, it's not just your relationship, it's trans-subjective too at that point.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. So if you want to make it more complicated, I'm not going to go there.
No.
Well, interesting to me that this is at the science level, because when you think of nature's relationship to us is different than God's in that. I think of, I think of people who, if you do something stupid in a hurricane, you're going to die whether you're a good person or a not good person. I mean, there's not that kind of, it's not the same kind of relationship. People think that they have a bargain with God because they believe they've done God's will. But nature is nature. Nature doesn't make any bargain. So it's interesting to me that this is at the beginning of a science chapter.
Yeah, but God and nature. God doesn't make any bargain to you.
And clothes are coming to the same.
If you're saying that maybe nature is a self symbol in science, whereas God is the self symbol.
Well, hang on, because she's going to change our view of science. Mm-hmm. Let me start out with what I think I understand and then try to address your question. We think of science as objective, but she is going to be saying, then how can there be outmoded theories? There is something subjective about our scientific theories as well. And just as we have no problem, well, you folks would have no problem saying what was I projecting onto God as I overcome previous religious views, so we can do the same to science and say, what were we projecting onto science or onto matter that we need to find within ourselves? I think that's an amazing statement. And in a way, our relationship to God and our relationship to our understanding of matter has a projective component to it. That's where she'll be going. I think there is a further stage in science as compared to religion, in that we think we have a way of verifying what our projections onto matter are, and we do. But you, where am I going to go with that? But still, over time, there will be experience that contradicts our scientific projections, just like there is experience that contradicts our religious projections. Does that make sense? Well, this is, yeah.
So we could say in the evolution of scientific thought, I mean, there's a knowledge in that, and it knows where it's leading us. So at a certain times in history, we believe this about science. And then the contradictions come, and then we believe another thing. So there's an evolution of that, just as there's an evolution of the God image, and it seems to
me
somehow that science and religion are eventually going to cross.
They already do cross. We just don't know it. In that, and I think, well, we're jumping around a bit, but it's probably just as well. We'll sort of get the lay of the land, then we can come back and look at the specifics. I read a sentence by Powell, which I think may be one of the most important things he's ever said. See if I can find it real quick here. This is page 87 in the Paulo Young correspondence. I now believe in the possibility of a simultaneous religious and scientific function of the appearance of archetypal symbols.
What?
I now believe in the possibility of a simultaneous religious and scientific function of the appearance of archetypal symbols. In other words, images underlie religion. We don't have a problem with that. Images also underlie science. That's the link between the two. There isn't a conflict between science and religion if you're living the symbolic life. If religion becomes living the symbolic life instead of projecting onto a religious canon, and if scientists recognize how images are actually guiding scientific thinking, image will be the thing that links the two. It doesn't link them now because religions project that image and scientists deny it. I think it's one of Pauli's enormous contributions, crazy as he may have been, to see that.
Well, that he had that
dream of the clock? Yeah. See, there it was the two, it was the vertical and the horizontal intersecting. You could take the vertical as religion, you could take the horizontal as science, mm-hmm. and that there was an intersection.
It sort of makes sense because it's the same mind apprehending each.
It's the same mind apprehending each. And what Pauli did was watch his dreams, how his scientific ideas began with dream images. And those dream images would also have a personal meaning for him. So that science could contain as much of a myth as religion. And for me, that's one of the practical importances of this book. It paves the way.
Is that ultimately what he could not live out, though?
And he could understand it, he couldn't live it out, though. Right. Okay, pop quiz. What is transobjective?
Not just my psychology.
Good. What is transpsyche?
Metaphysical.
Okay. Happy with that? No.
I keep it, that little, those words in front of my eyes, like, yeah, looking at them.
It might be as we read more, we'll better understand it.
Or another way to put that would be, just because you have a dream of something that pertains to more than you doesn't mean it has a metaphysical basis. Just because Carol dreams of that, or has an image of that snake, doesn't mean that snake exists somewhere in a metaphysical reality. It exists as a psychological reality. But it's not beyond human perception.
And we can't make a statement on its metaphysical nature.
No. That isn't Allah. See, that's a snake. A religious mind might say, well, you see, Allah is destroying the... In fact, there are Muslims who say Allah is destroying the church because we have strayed from the law, just like Jews said. So that snake would be an agent of Allah. I'm sure you could find a Muslim who would say that.
And then other Muslims, I think I heard this, and it reminded me of my painting, he said his heart rose up. So then other Muslims are connecting it with their very own inner feeling. And
yeah, we got to remember, yeah, Muslim has the range of fundamentalism to, as we do.
Wow, we didn't get too far.
But what we got was important.
Page-wise,
But it's almost as if she's saying it, and she's putting it out there, but like Jung, she's just trying to get it down so that other people can expand upon it, or she's saying it so that the people who can't handle it can gloss over it and not see it.
I think she's thinking out loud, so to speak, yeah. I think she has an intuition of how our grasp of reality may evolve and how very important that is to the way we live together. And it confuses her as much as it confuses us, but she's just getting it down and saying, now, it's written, let's try to understand it. That's my sense. It's sort of an intuitive revelation to her and to you. Well, it's probably a stop. We have a little bit of time. I don't think we should take on anything new. That's plenty. But we probably won't get past 76. So what you write for today will be good for next time.
I'm going back through and making sure we have. We contemplate all that we've discussed.
Yeah, trying to figure it out.
But the title is a little deceptive because it goes into realms way beyond projection. It goes into really what's the nature of reality.
She makes a lot of statements about physics, but she doesn't really give you enough information on to know what theory she's actually referring to. I had that problem.
Did you? In this, yeah. Well, I'm torn. I think we could get bogged down, and so I'm going to try to just concentrate on the main ideas, and if you want to pursue a particular theory or something, by do so.
Well, she talks about the about parity. I think that's changed now.
Has it?
I think so. I'll try to look that up, but I think...
Some of that, I think we'll go nuts if we try to understand every... I felt we got a little bogged down with the religion, and that was bad enough, but with the science... I'm going to try to focus on the main ideas and spend our time racking our brain over the theories, but sort of look at the consequences she draws.
Will you be using that for us?
Well, that was the idea, but
We'll need it. Good.
Maybe I'll just leave it there. People say, "What's
we'll
that?"
Project onto it.
And I'll say, "Well, I'm an artist, yeah. And this is my
view of the universe.
This is my view of the universe."
Yeah.
I like that.
Why, it looks just like mine.
But it's not translated. Okay, well, we'll pick up, I guess we can stop. We'll pick up with page 54. And we will get past 76, I doubt. Okay, well, I'll come back. Good to see you all.